Hello and welcome to the DTFF podcast. My name is Scott and I'm joined with Ash and Todd.
Hello. Hello.
No fire friends. Tonight we're going to talk about the...
It's been so long. FTF. We're not even sure who Scott is anymore.
Right. Yeah, I'm here. I got my fresh haircut. Anyways, tonight we're going to talk about the FTX that that you guys were just took part of last week. Sorry, this last weekend. I was away, but it's an FTX for the entire South Okanagan, what we call the Regional Task Force for Wildfire. So, Ash, I think you were the one that kind of planned, or, well, in conjunction with other people, you kind of took lead on planning this, so you might as well start.
Yeah, so like Scott said, we've got a regional task force that is semi in line with BC Wildfire Services. Basically, most departments in our region, it's ever expanding. Most of the departments in our region are part of a regional task force. And at the start of the season, you say, hey, I've got an engine or a brush truck or a water tender times one, two, basically whatever you have that you think that you could basically send out at a moment's notice in our valley. So this isn't quite the same as what we register for a drawdown for BC Wildfire. This is just for basically our valley. So the last couple of years, they've been getting together, doing kind of a kickoff to spring, get everybody together, kind of dust off some skills. The first year was pretty dry. Just basically got up there, got everybody together, had a bit of a chit chat. Last year, they expanded on it, got out, we actually got some water flowing. We had a couple of skills that we got to do. It was good. We had an incident within an incident just to see how that would go. This year, Assistant Chief Petrick from Willowbrook reached out to me and said, hey, like, I'm planning this. I'm wondering maybe we do it a little bit different this year. What are your thoughts? And I mean, the moment that he gave me an inch, I took a bit of a mile and we started to roll with it. Rather than going up and doing it in the same space that we always do, we thought, hey, let's change up our location and basically not tell anybody. So in years past, it's been everybody shows up together. We do a bit of a round table and then we go out and work, where this year we opted to scratch that plan and actually page ourselves out through our local dispatch. We gave a staging area, and at the same time of the dispatch, we actually already had our local department here out working. So we treated it like a live event. And what we ended up coming up with, myself and Chief Petrick, we thought, hey, let's start along the lower corridor of our valley. So right off the highway, there was a large piece of equipment that was going to be on fire with ember cast going into some of the ground fuels, some pretty heavy winds blowing from the north, which then drove the fire up into the mountain range, which then spread over into our neighboring district, which is where Chief Fetcher works. So that was kind of the idea. We kind of threw around a few other options and a few other things. We went and spoke to all of the residents. But that's basically what it was. And I think we had seven departments that were involved. BCEHS, a representative from BC Wildfire Services, basically just to come and be a part of it, come and observe it. RCMP, search and search rescue. Todd was actually there representing BCEHS, which was cool. So we kind of got to hang out for the first half of the sim, but prior to you needing to be involved. So that was the overall gist of it. We could definitely go into a little bit more about it, obviously, but yeah, that was the idea. We're going to start a fire low in the valley. The fire is going to spread. We're going to request this task force. This task force is dispatched through our local dispatching agency. Chief Bob, that's local here. He ended up being our staging officer. So as Apparatus got into town, he was then able to check them in, give them the update, and then task them out. And we kind of played it real time. And, you know, some of the, like, the closest agency was here within maybe 15 minutes. The furthest one away was 45. So within that first hour, we kind of had to plan the event where, like, many steps can happen, but nothing too large yet, because we wanted most hands on deck before, like, the big event started to happen. So that was the idea of starting low and then moving high, because there was going to be a lot of moving parts between actioning the fire down in the valley bottom until it got up into the neighboring area.
I really liked kind of just stepping back and being able to hang out with you in the beginning of it, watching it kind of evolve and having that real-time page out. How the real task force would deploy, I think, worked really well. It was neat to see a bit more of the real-time structure, how everything's going to unfold. Because when you guys started out, you had that that incident, the initial response to the equipment fire. Fire was spreading. You were able to be there, out of play, kind of painting the picture for your first engine who arrived as to the IC. Like, hey, this is what you see. You're getting a lot of heavy ember cast now. It's starting to run up the hill. You guys can't attack it enough from there, and it's got a good wind pushing. So now we're thinking about structured defense, and you guys started bumping your assets as needed. And then as the situation evolved, like you said, those other trucks coming in, your IC end up asking for a task force leader, and looking ahead of where that fire is going and deployed him. So that was really good to see.
Yeah, I think it was really good. Rob was the initial IC. We kind of played it like we didn't have a lot of manpower locally here for the day, so they got what they got. So they got an engine full of five. It started out obviously as a vehicle fire, so that was what they went out and they rolled to. So they were in their structure fire gear. They obviously knew what it was going to be, so they brought their wild hunt gear with them. But they loaded up the truck with five, and then we had a brush truck coming with three on board at the time. And then they did a bit of a shuffle of resources once the sim kind of started to evolve. I think what was good, because we didn't have, for the sim, we didn't have a water tender. So Chief Graham sent out the first arriving water tender to help basically support Rob and his crew. So we had an engine that was doing structure protection. It was definitely going towards some structures. So once they got the vehicle fire knocked down, they bumped up and they went into structure protection mode. So they got themselves anchored a bit more down by the structures. The brush truck then was out there trying to suppress all of the spot fires, which we had cones, probably 20 cones up in that area that they had to go and action as they were working. And that probably took a good 30-ish minutes. So by that time, we were already getting, you know, we had the one water tender arrived. We had a TFL arrive. So a task force leader got to staging. Chief relayed back to Rob, and Rob's like, yeah, I want to task out the TFL, which is the chief from Willowbrook. Chief Tony, he went up to the top of the hill where that fire was traveling to, and he set up a secondary command station there, set up a secondary staging area. So as he felt, hey, this is going to need more and more apparatus, let's use this one location as a secondary staging. And as people became available, he was working with Chief Graham down in primary staging, and he was sending more equipment up to him. And just to paint a picture of what the upper side of it looked like. So the bottom side of the fire is obviously the base of the valley. So a nice flat bottom. You've got some vineyard. You've got some industrial type area. And then it backs onto a mountain. And there's intermix homes back in the area. And then as you travel south, it goes a little bit more into interface. But where we were at kind of like the tip of the fire was mostly intermix. So one or two pieces of equipment down at the bottom was enough to kind of hold that at bay. Up at the top, you have one means of egress. You have a road that goes in, and then it forks off to the left, and both of them run back in, and it's very intermixed. And there's probably, what do you think up there, Todd? Probably 20 homes? Scott, maybe 20 homes?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're probably sitting around 20. And hard access, too, like the one road, the way it went in, dead ends, right? So you got to think about your escape routes and stuff. And then they had the good anchor point of the other main road where the secondary staging was located, but still a good number of homes scattered along down that way as well. So, yeah, definitely a lot of homes to be concerned about for how much apparatus you're having sent and the time frame when it arrives.
Yeah, so
this is an area that's been hit by wildfire before, too.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely picked it because it's a realistic area that has been impacted with wildfire, and all of the ground fuels, all of the ladder fuels, like everything out there is ready to burn again. I mean, there's been some really good mitigation that's been happening within their little community as well, but I mean, you can do all the work that you could do, but when the conditions are right, everything around the structures is still potentially going to burn. So hopefully it never comes back through the area, but you know, training there, knowing that it is a high probability area that we could see some activity. Yeah, that was really, really good. I think one of the few things, there was many things, but a few of the things that really stood out to me, Chief Tony did, getting search and rescue tasked out early. We kind of painted the picture of the direction of the fire. So one of the roads was not going to be accessible for search and rescue. You would have to have fire suppression to go up that one fork of the road. It wasn't heavily coming that way yet, but that's where it was going to be traveling to, where the other side, the other fork of the road, was a major concern, but they still had time. So tasking SAR to go and do the tactical evacs, usually you have time to do an evacuation notice, and then you get, you know, you'll get a notice, an alert. This was straight to tactical evacs. Just the nature, I think they said it was like August the 18th, at whatever time of the day we were at crossover base. Like, it was everything that you don't want to have for a wildfire. So painting that picture of how aggressive the fire, I forget what Bo said the rate of speed was. I think Todd might still have that.
Yeah, so the weather report, if I remember correctly, it was temperature of 25 to 28 degrees, northeastern wind, range from 30 gusting up to 70 in high timber, and with the RH of, I think it was low. I can't remember what the exact number was. It was extremely low. We were right in crossover, and yeah, it was basically the worst of the worst. The scenario was in August, so, and what we're projecting for the summer.
Yeah, obviously it's obviously Todd's bedtime there. We just heard his phone pick up, but yeah, so with those weather conditions, going straight into the tactical evacs, they were working on basically the right flank of the fire, if you will. They were committing some engines for bump and run tactics, and a couple of brush trucks were going in to do tactical evacs of the homes and the residents on the left side, on the left fork there. And at that time, so we're probably an hour in now. Everybody is arriving on scene. All pieces of the puzzle are now in play. So Todd and I hop in our command truck, and we kind of beetle to the end of the road, and we go meet up with some of the homeowners at the very end of the road, and a super nice couple. They're like, "Oh, I'm super happy to have you guys here. Everything's great. What's going to happen next?" So I say, well, we're about to have what we call an incident within an incident. So somebody's about to get hurt, and they're going to have to come up with a plan to deliver their patient out to BCEHS, which is my man Todd here. And the lady's like, "Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun. Can I be the patient?" And like, we all laughed. We're like, absolutely. If you want to be a patient, let's, you know, like usually we end up dropping one of our own. But hey, let's just say that we had a resident that was frantic from the wildfire that was approaching, and they had about a 3-ish meter drop from their upper lawn to their lower. So we just staged that she had a bit of a trip and fall. She was looking, ended up doing a trip and fall over 3 meters of height, which prompts a lot of extra precautionary steps for patient care. And she got to lay down on the ground while the one brush truck pulls up to do the evac. And the husband's like, oh, hey, my wife just fell. And they were both super happy to help us. I'd say her acting skills were a tad better than the husband's. He's like, ah, yeah, the wife's down there. But she gets, or once the crew's down at the bottom, she's like, oh, it hurts so bad. It hurts so bad. Hey? Okay?
That might be the only action he's going to act when his wife falls off the wall.
Yeah.
My wife fell down. She's over there somewhere. Get the old life insurance.
So I did ask him, like, yeah, do you mind if a bunch of firefighters come and take her away? He's like, I don't know. Are you going to bring her back? I'm like, should we? Yeah, no, he was really happy to help. And, so, yeah, the guys were really quick. They jumped on them. Because it's a sim, they just kind of had a couple questions for us. And then once we kind of painted the entire medical picture, the one party was down on C-spine right away, while the other was making radio comms to get the next steps going, which in that scenario, like, nobody's prepped for transport. Like, that's not our job in most scenarios. And Todd, maybe you can touch base on when you would and when you wouldn't as an ambulance crew enter into an active fire zone.
Yeah, absolutely. So basically the scenario was we had an ambulance and incident commander at the staging zone up near the fire up by Willowbrook Road. And at that point, because there's active evacs happening and tactical evacuations happening, there's still a fire threat. However, we cannot respond into an evac zone. There is some special parameters. So we need communication with our incident commander, communication with potentially our specialists, and we have our own kind of high-risk hazard rules that we have to follow. And then, of course, communicating with your task force leader, whoever the site commanders are. And we always default back to how comfortable is the crew, because they can still refuse to go in if they don't feel safe or comfortable with it. So for that scenario was, we were not going to have an ambulance respond out of that staging area up to the scene of the incident. Now for real life events, that totally may be the case. We may have to, as fire departments, figure out, okay, ambulance isn't coming in, how are we going to evacuate this patient, package them and bring them out to that staging area. There is some situations, and I was looking at our policies again today, we can make that decision to go in if safe to do so. So that may be under a vehicle escort if there's no active fire and, like, obviously a big threat area. So we can. It's not always a hard no. But most circumstances, we're relying on the fire departments or search and rescue to bring that patient out to us. So for that scenario, it was a no-go. Great comms by the initial crew on scene and requesting ambulance to come to them. Task force leader asked me, relayed the information. I said, no, we cannot go. If you guys can bring the patient out to staging, we'll be prepped and ready to receive at that point. So at that point, that was when a second truck arrived. So your brush 181 arrived. And they had the clamshell and the spinal and the other gear to attend. And your crew jumped off, jumped into action, assisted the other department there as well, packaging her up, got her on the clamshell. Some quick troubleshooting is, hey, how are we going to package and transport her now? So they were able to slide the clamshell with the patient on it in the backseat of the brush truck. And it worked out well. They had to shorten it a little bit because of the width. But it worked out fantastic. And we talked a lot about just being able to troubleshoot. Like, if that wasn't the case, if you couldn't shorten that clamshell, if it was a full spinal or whatever the situation is, well, what's the next step? Is there an apparatus on site that can transfer that person out safely? Is SAR on scene? Are they able to assist in that manner? Or if it's a no-go, hey, we have no way of getting this patient out, that needs to be relayed back to the ambulance and then that incident commander can make that decision.
Yeah, I think that's a really good thing to bring up, and maybe not everybody's aware of it. So, like, we don't do patient transport, but when the shit hits the fan, if it's one of ours for sure, or in that scenario, if nobody else is coming and you have to get somebody out of a bad way, your standard clamshell on its shortest length will fit sideways across the seat in the back of, I'd say, a 2016 era or newer pickup truck. I mean, ours is our brush truck's a 2016 F-350. But it fits in the back of like our new command truck and most other ones. What the guys ended up doing was taking some extra blankets and rolling them up just to help kind of keep that spine board clam level. One person can sit on the center console and mind the patient as they're driving out. Is it proper? Is it perfect? No, but you have to be able to adapt. And there was a lot of that happening. I think that was really, really good. So, yeah, kudos for patient care. Kudos to the crew there that, you know, had to do a quick pivot move on it. And they got the patient out to Todd out at the ambulance there. And, yeah, she made a miraculous recovery quite quickly once they were out in staging. And while all of that is happening, there was a update from dispatch that one of the homeowners that stayed behind to prep and fight the fire because they were stubborn and they wanted to be there. They ended up calling 911 saying, "Hey, I've got flames coming from my house. The fire has impacted my structure." So there's already two brush trucks that are tasked out to dealing with this medical, and then a structure fire comes in. So Rob actually was the first truck that was closest, so they got tasked to it, but they have already been flowing water. So they had at that time maybe 50% water left. So they get on scene, they update the TFL, "Hey, we're on scene, but we are going to need some water." Well, it just happened that there was some water stations that were getting set up, so there was some bladders dropped, and we only had, I think, one water tender left that had any water in it while the others were out getting filled up again. So quickly became an issue with water management. So knowing that they were low on water, they actually didn't battle the structure. They just took care of any amber transfers, which is really good. And for the record, a structure was actually a massive burn pile. So this area is in the rural area of town, and we are allowed to have outdoor burning of your non-dimensional lumbers, your tree prunings, things of that nature. So it's all natural woods, which there was a resident up there. He's actually a member of the neighboring department, and he was waiting to burn. And we're like, "Hey, if you're going to burn, why don't we burn on Saturday, and we'll call it a structure fire." So we got his pile going. It was rocking. It was actually getting up into the trees a bit because the wind shifted. So Rob actually had to do true exposure protection. So they treated that like they would, you know, if a structure is over 25%, and you're obviously not going to go inside, they shifted with their minimum of water that they had, and they went to exposure protection, and they made sure that the surrounding trees were not getting impinged with flame, and they ended up doing a really awesome job there. So I think two engines got dispatched to that location, and then simultaneously there was another structure that got hit as well. So there was another burn pile that got lit up to simulate a structure fire as well. So the remaining engine and a brush truck was tasked over to that. And yeah, I mean, at that point, basically everybody was in play. There was water being shuttled everywhere. They overcame their shortfall of water quite quickly, which is good. And then, yeah, everybody just kind of completed their task. The only other thing that I wanted to mention that I kind of skipped on coming through it was, I think right around the time of the patient. Tony requested if there was any other TFLs on scene, knowing that the incident was getting a little bit too large for him to deal with solely. So much like Rob did down at the bottom of the valley, knowing I'm going to be stuck down here, I need a TFL to go up there and take over command of the secondary area. Well, once we all got on scene, Tony realized this is too much for me. He was losing his span of control, which is true. Like, it was done like that for a reason. We wanted to see if there was going to be a shift, and there was. I didn't care, as one of the guys that was setting it up, if they used a TFL. You could use a captain. You could literally use anybody that has that, that sort of command experience in a scenario like that. Like, use somebody and drop that span of control down. So luckily, Deputy Chief from up the valley, Leslie, she took over as TFL too, and ended up divvying up the crew. And they were kind of a unified command. So we had TFL 1, TFL 2, and nobody was really like the main command, because it was all happening so fast. I think Tony was still kind of like the number one, and he was running the scene. But he also had people that were directly under him, and then Leslie had people that were under her. But everything rolled out really, really well. I have to give kudos to everybody that was there. Everybody moved with a purpose. They weren't running, they weren't being spastic. They were moving with a purpose. They were working hard, taking it very, very seriously. And I talked to Bo from BC Forestry a bunch throughout the sim, and he was really impressed with what he saw. And he's like, I wish more people in the area did things like this. It gets you working with your neighboring departments way more frequently. So the first time that you start to see these people isn't out when the shit's hitting the fan. Like you're shaking hands, you're chatting, you're just getting to know some of the people that are around you. And I think there's a shit ton of benefit to do that over a sim rather than waiting until summertime when things go sideways.
Absolutely. I think, I was very fortunate because I was just in the incident command role with the ambulance within that unified command structure. And so I was able to really sit back and just kind of observe and listen to everybody, how it got kind of all played out. And it was definitely the move when Tony tasked out a second TFL. It freed up so much, and the communication was fantastic. Everybody was short and concise. And just, again, standing back and watching how everybody worked together, it just really reinforces that for this summer when shit kicks off, right? So that was really good to see.
Yeah, so that's basically it for the sim. The initial page went out at 7:50 in the morning, and we called actual stop at 11 o'clock. So from start to finish, wasn't crazy, crazy long, but it was, long enough and realistic enough to get everybody working, to get that stress level up. And like any good sim, we came back down to the hall here. We had some pizza and some soft drinks, and yeah, just basically got to hang out with everybody for 25, 35 minutes and chat about all of your wins, some of the things that you wish maybe went a little bit different, but there really wasn't a lot of that. Like, everybody, I think there was a few people that were hard on themselves, but there was no reason to be. Like, I know Tony's like, oh, I wish I called for the second TFL faster. I'm like, yeah, maybe, but you did fine. Like, there was no point where it was like, shit, if he really should have done this sooner. Nothing that was done was bad. Yeah, no, everything was really, really good. I think as firefighters, we're always kind of our worst critics. So there was a bit of that. So I just wanted to make sure I kind of went around and chatted with as many people as I could and just kind of reassured, like, hey, this might have been a bit newer for you guys. Like, this is something that we do almost every Thursday. But for the people that aren't as familiar with going out there and doing these style of sims, yeah, it was really, really good. So, yeah. That was it for Task Force 24 training sim.
Where, So back to the beginning, were they coming from their neighboring departments, or were they already in having a meeting with us? I can't remember how you had it organized.
No, so they were at home. By home, like on their couch home. So they already had some pre-set out members that were going to come. A few of the like chiefs or captains or whatever were the ones that went down just in case like extra people showed up and tried to hop on a truck that maybe they missed the memo or whatever. But there were people from each department that responded to the page from their house. So it was as close to a real-time rollout for everybody as possible. I'd say we were probably the only people that cheated because we were like, it was our own home system. And like, we also didn't want our portion down at the bottom was like the most lame part that we had to kill time, right? Because we had to keep our guys busy, but if we waited until they came from home and then like we only had so much time. Yeah. So I kind of told all of our guys like, hey, I want you at the hall no earlier than 7:45. You'll be there no later than 7:50. Kind of wink, wink. Right. So I'd say most of our guys were at the hall by 1:45. But they didn't know what we were taking. They didn't know whereabouts we were going. And then at 8:10, dispatch toned us out. And then when Rob requested, dispatch toned out the entire task force. So everything was done live.
Was it they weren't responding code 3, they were just kind of routine, or how was that?
Yeah, so we asked everybody to respond to staging non-code 3. So they came routine, but once they were in town, so basically once they left from staging, they treated it like an active AO, and it was lights on with no sirens, much like you would see on any wildland scenario that will happen throughout the summertime. So we obviously went out, we put it on our Facebook Friday night, and then again Saturday morning, just to let the residents know there is going to be a sim that's going to be that's going to be happening in our neighborhood and some of our neighboring areas, just so we didn't give away too much of it. We didn't want to say where, but just be aware there will be some fire trucks rolling around with lights on. This is just for training. And again, like our community is so great. Like they welcome us and they welcome these events with open arms. So I know there's a lot of grumpy people in the world that would be like, this is bullshit. Like, why are you guys doing this? No, like everybody that we saw out there, everybody that commented, it was all big positivity, which is awesome.
Yeah, because essentially this whole month we're doing last week we had a scenario, trucks driving everywhere, or we had a big thing where trucks are driving everywhere. We had this big thing, and then I think at the end of the month we have another thing happening. Yeah, we do a lot of scenarios, which is good. Yeah, but the town always embraces it. Where was our staging at?
So initial staging was actually at our hall, because we weren't sure, like we were sure, but like Rob and Bob had no idea like where this was going to travel. So having everybody come in, check in at the hall, and then get tasked out, which worked out really, really well. The first driving apparatus was a water tender, so they got tasked out to the original scene. Everybody else that arrived got tasked up the mountain to secondary right. staging. And for realism, like, so everybody could see what was going on, we ended up kind of running off everything in the valley, and then we moved, even Bob moved up to secondary staging. So once everybody has come, he then bumped up and took over as staging officer at the secondary location as well. Because again, the first arriving unit rolled in and got tasked out to be staging. So they were already out of the play while more apparatus was coming. So once everybody checked in, Bob could bump up, take over staging there, and then put everybody else back in play. So yeah, it's good.
I just wanted to the water thing for a minute. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I was gonna mention back to the water thing for a minute. You'd said they were down to 50% water, which in reality they only had 30% left because protocol is at 20% we kill the water unless it's absolutely needed because for safety. Like if we need it as a defensive line. So yeah, like there's that protocol in there as well that a lot of people don't know about, like our guys know about, and most firefighters know about, but people out there might not know that we actually will shut down at 20%, keep that 20% in reserve for protection for us.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And, kudos to Rob for being aware of that. He wasn't, just out there flowing water all willy-nilly. He relayed that info that they were going to be short on water. Basically said, we're down to half a tank. So that means they've only got like less than a quarter of a tank left that they can action the fire with, which is why they got a secondary engine en route to the first location. Just because, hey, let's get Rob there first. His crew's close. They can start, actioning some of the exposures. And then when the second engine got there, they started to action the fire, which bought time for the water supply to come back in and bump Rob back up. So, yeah. Yeah, awesome comms. I know Todd mentioned it once already, but we always joke that comms are a shit show, and comms are a shit show. But with that many moving parts, and we operated everything on one channel. So rather than divvying up, like Task Force 1 goes on this channel, Task Force 2 on this channel, everything stayed on the one channel. Just because not everybody has, everybody's channel. So we are operating under the few local channels that we all share. So rather than divvying up, everybody just kept it simple. And yeah, comms stayed really clear, which is good. There was no like talking over people, walking on somebody. Everybody kept, nice and patient, kept all of their comms short and simple, very, very clear. So again, big, big kudos to that, because comms are always a fuck show. So
I just wanted to add, I just want to touch base on some of the kind of the roles and responsibilities of the ambulance for this scenario as well. So typically for wildfire response, generally the ambulance doesn't get sent for a standby. In the initial phases of an event, yes, we will. But then usually forestry is kind of self-sufficient. They have their own medics and first aid trucks. That's when usually we start separating. However, because this was an incident that started within your fire protection district, we were called to support you guys. So that's how we arrived. And I just want to paint the picture for if anybody's out there does both roles as well that isn't aware. Like if you're just, the two paramedics rolling in that truck, you are now incident command. You are part of that unified command process until if it's going to be a prolonged incident, then maybe NIC or unit chief will get dispatched up to that to take over that responsibility. So I've been IC with the ambulance for a couple of wildfires in our area now. And so for this one, it's very key to get that information of, okay, how many personnel do you have? What's our road closures? Do we have road closures? Is there evacuation zones? Is there evacuation alerts? And what's it looking like? What's the projected next step? Like, is there going to be, and what areas of concern do you have? Because we need to relay that information up the chain to our dispatch and our supervisors and our DOC to say, hey, Highway 97 is going to be shut down. Well, that's a major artery for the ambulance service for daily operations. Is this going to be coming into the community? Do we have care homes that now need to be evacuated? Do we have hospitals that need to be evacuated? That's a huge ambulance response. So we need that key information sent up the chain very quickly. So by establishing those communications with that incident commander or that TFL as part of that unified command is very important. And a lot of crews don't remember that. They just think, well, I'm just there as an ambulance on standby for the fire department. But no, it's you have that initial step that you have to do and report that back up the chain of command for our service. And then ideally, if you can stay on comm somehow with them, we have multiple channels on our ambulance radios as well just to monitor what's going on. So if you hear if there's an IWI or incident with an incident, you can already be prepping for that. And then if you're knowing that you're going to be now tasked with a patient "Hey, dispatch, we've been notified of a patient coming our way. Start another ambulance up for that standby." So we don't want to deplete those resources as well. So just keep that in the back of your mind if you're ever thrown into that crew. And also for any other fire captains or TFLs, you know, it's important. Sometimes the ambulance service are kind of the black sheep of that crowd, right? Because we're not the sexy fire apparatus that's showing up. But it's important to pass that information off of, hey, this is where these evac zones are going. This is what my concerns are. And these are the highways that are going to be impacted. And then we can start responding appropriately. So just keep that in mind.
All right. Oh, sorry. Drop the mic. Mic drop. Any more on that?
Nope, I don't think so.
Sweet. Yeah, so a lot of planning went ahead on that. Good work on everyone's part. And like you said, Ash, we should be doing, well, we do lots of those, but everybody should be doing lots of those. It's really the only way to test your skills other than live is to do lots of those FTXs, as many as you can. Like you said, we try to do ours monthly, whether it's wildfire or structure fire or whatever. Yeah, I'd like to see more people doing that. Modus, Ash.
Yeah, Modus, Claim to Fame is going to be their snagger tool. They got a ton of other stuff. They're working on a lot of their passive entry gear right now. They got some through the lock tools that they're playing with as well, which is really, really cool. They've got a lot of textiles and like bag kits that you can build your own, you can buy as a kit. So yeah, this steel snagger tool, force entry wedges, passive entry gear. Check them out on their social media. And if you like what you see, use discount code DTFF5. And if you're a listener and you're going to Spring Seminar 2024, we have a goodie bag from Modus that we will be handing out to people that step up and do awesome work. So any listeners, if you make mention of that, you don't suck, you might get some free Modus.
Sweet. Todd, stop the bleed.
Stop the bleed. So, three major methods of massive hemorrhage control. Direct pressure, wound packing, and tourniquet application. Make sure you have a good tourniquet. This Forrester Sim, last one. I didn't see a whole lot of tourniquets out there on guys. The last Engine Boss course that we're at, there was a good number of tourniquets hanging off the guy's chest rigs. That was really good to see. So make sure you have them, man, especially in these wildfire scenarios and events. Like when we're out there doing those bushfires, make sure you got a good tourniquet on you and it's accessible. So yeah, go to stopthebleed.org or .ca. You'll find or .com. You'll find all the training information you need and practice. Throw these scenarios into your fire practices and make them realistic and fun.
Ask Wolf Tree Coffee.
Yeah, Wolf Tree Coffee out of Oliver, British Columbia. We've been sipping back on the initial attack blend here tonight. Awesome group of people. We teamed up with them back in last May for our seminar. I came up with a blend and named it the initial attack blend. They have a ton of other flavors as well, but with the initial attack blend, the Wolf Tree DTFF collab, $2 from every pound sold is donated to the Honor House Society for Honor House on a Ranch. They look after first responders in their time of need if they're down for surgery, or the Honor Ranch if you're recovery or PTSD or whatever else. Amazing group. So both amazing people, peoples. But yeah, Wolf Tree Coffee, check them out online. I know they are shipping. So if you want to get a taste of what they got, they can ship some out to you as well.
Nice. Todd, Tanner Olson Band.
Tanner Olson Band, country music out of West Coast Canada and now Nashville. I guess mostly Nashville now. So check them out. They're an awesome band. We've had them up. We spoke with them lots. We've had them up here. They played for the Spring Seminar last year, which was fantastic. And, Scott, unless you have any other information on anything new that they're doing, they're making a fair amount of new songs. So, yeah, just search them up, man. Have a listen.
Nice. And lastly, you can check us out on Facebook, on was going to say Spotify. Well, we are on Spotify, I guess. Check us out on anywhere you get your podcasts. Instagram, TikTok, not X, not LinkedIn, but all those other places you can find us. Yeah, give YouTube. Us a like and a follow and 5 stars and whatever. Anything else?
I thought you were going to say 2 stars and a wish.
Oh, 2 stars and a wish. Yeah, give us 2 stars and a wish. T-shirts. You guys are selling T-shirts at the seminar. And if you want to buy a T-shirt, you can get it at Todd. Do you know it now?
You go to our Facebook, and there will be a link there for an email, and you can email us, and we'll get that information and sell you a shirt.
Nice. All right. I think it's time to say goodnight. Ash.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Todd.
Have a good night, everybody. Thank you.
Good night, everyone. Stay safe. Stay DTFF.